This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning and welcome to BFM. It is 6 o'clock in the morning on 19th February 2021. Wong Xiaoning, Philip C and myself, Koo Soo Chung, are with you.
Aren't we lucky?
Good morning.
Good morning. Aren't we lucky to have you in the studio today, Chung, on a Friday?
The dubious honour.
Yeah, you beaming in, bouncing and beaming in.
I wouldn't say bouncing, I wouldn't say beaming. I'd be saying moaning my way in.
Not really.
So, how's the week been for you?
Well, today is what?
Friday, lah.
Yeah, I know, but hello. I'm trying to keep track of the days of Chinese New Year. Yesterday, actually, I forgot to wish everybody happy birthday.
So, day seven. Yeah.
Because that was, yesterday was what they call Yan Yat, right? Which is everybody's birthday, by the way.
Oh, is that why I got
yesterday,
those messages?
Yeah.
So you thought you were standing with the wrong person, is it?
No, you know, it's just one of those WhatsApp things that people
send. And Chuang was like, where's my present then? Where's my present then? As usual.
I'm good. I just got very excited because the Mars rover landed in Mars. But that's quite nerdy and geeky, I know.
Oh, yeah. And apparently it was supposed to be a super difficult mission, right? The landing is always the hardest part.
And we hope you're going to find life on this universe.
But life not as what we expect, isn't it?
Yeah,
not as we know it, guys. Not as we know it.
But then if we follow, and this is because, Philip, you say life imitates art or art imitates life, aren't we going to wake up some alien and they're going to come after us?
And that's perfectly fine.
Oh, okay.
Are you supportive, Philip, of planet habitation or other ex-planet habitation?
No, actually, I don't. I'm just curious in the exploration side.
The science side, I don't
really want to go and inhabit another planet.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we need to be responsible for the current planet. I hear a lot of all this nonsense about, we can't deal with our own stuff here, so let's just go and leave and pack ourselves to another planet.
And then go create chaos in another planet.
Do you guys remember the movie Avatar? Remember when Avatar came out?
Yes.
And then this is how the humans, like...
The blue-colored people.
Yeah,
sorry.
You polluted your world. Now you want to come to our world and pollute us as well. Do you know what I mean?
I really don't. I just love the whole point of exploring and finding out, like, what's there, what's happening. And it's really a milestone because the technology there will really give us more clarity, I believe.
You see, so there's ordinary people who do all that trawling of like all the gossip sites. And then you got Philip C.
Yeah.
Who checks out the Mars rover exploration program.
No, not just that. The science and the engineering behind it.
You missed yesterday. Yeah. We had a conversation about lithium.
Lithium?
Yes.
Good Lord. Some people have conversations about quite other things.
Well, lithium in respect to electric vehicles, that part you're interested in, Chuang,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So there is something for everybody. But what do we have up next?
Well, I talk about people who can't shut up.
And who would that be? And you, Philip?
Well, hail to the Chiefs. We have new C-suite roles in this pandemic era. I'm going to roll my eyes a lot then.
Okay, and then I'll be talking about the world without Facebook. Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. But in the meantime, Stevie Wonder with Sir Duke, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. Don't you just love Stevie? You know, Stevie.
Super cool.
Stevie collects awards at the Grammys, right? He can't stop talking. You know how I know that? It's true. I'm not kidding. Eddie Murphy. Back when he's a comedian.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry, that's my...
That was your bad joke, Chuang.
Contribution. It's true. Stevie can't shut up. Anyway, so I'll tell you who can't shut up. Men generally can't shut up. That's according to the Washington Post. Is that true, Phil?
Well, this story inspired me.
Why ask another man?
Well, there you go. So Wong, can men shut up or not? In board meetings, in a work setting?
I find men in two camps. Either they say so little that you can't, like, what do they want, you know? And I've had bosses which never say anything, or even when they do, it's so little, it's so cryptic, you're like, what does he want? I can't figure it out.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, well, let's...
Better say it. Better not say it.
And then I have bosses that, like you say, just go on and on and on. And I think that's the term endearment for them is mansplaining. They explain everything as if I don't...
Or mentorupting.
Or
what Chuang was saying, manologues.
But is it true? Because definitely in a working setting, right? The men are more likely to speak up and speak longer than the girls.
Yeah. So put some numbers to it, because we are all here and must be a bit nerdy here. So
yes, we are database.
So scientists actually went and did a research, right? So groups of five, when they make decisions, if there was one member that was woman, she spoke 40% less. Even if the group has a majority of three women, the women spoke 36% less than each of the two men. Only in groups of four women do they take the same amount of airtime as one man.
Yeah, but I think this is because of the way we are made up. Okay, so again, I fall back on the psychoanalytical background, right? It's the agreeable types versus the disagreeable types. And all the agreeable types on the other side are all the agreeable ones are 100% female. All the disagreeable ones are 100% male, right? So, but the Venn diagram that bisects in the middle, you will have women who are disagreeable and you will have men who are agreeable, right? And you'll see in a corporate performance setting is usually the disagreeable ones who rise to the top and become CEOs. And I saw this because I saw the studies on the Morning Brew, and I think the number of billionaires in the US are still like less than 10%. There are billionaires, female billionaires in every state in America, but on a percentage basis, they are much, much fewer than men because they're just generally more agreeable.
I don't know whether it's just the fact that, a lot of this, I think, is socialization. Okay, it starts from birth, right? Mm. In terms of your gender roles and the specific gender roles that society and your own family kind of define for you. And so,
Don't agree, La.
Yeah, I think there is gender bias all the time. And we don't realize it, but it's happening.
In my family, my sister, who did go through that socialization, never was quiet. She was the one who was dominant. Oh my God. She was like a force of nature, man, I tell you.
So fascinating.
Then my mom also was very vocal.
So I'm now thinking into business context and how do meetings now take place in Zoom settings, whether men and women, how will they do this mansplaining or not, or, you know, if someone talks too much. And I realize when I now go for Zoom meetings, it's very hard to interrupt. But what happens is people have to put up their hands and then they're only allowed to speak. I wonder if that whole shift to a digital environment has really helped remove this man interrupting, because that was in a physical environment. Now, I want to bring this to a recent thing I saw just this morning, which was the US Congress hearings, right, with respect to Reddit cases. And what happened was the congressmen and women had 5 minutes only to pose questions. And interestingly, I can see the difference between the men and the women. So the men were just going on asking questions and they were being asked, can you stop? Can you stop 5 minutes up your time, right? Whereas the women who were asking the questions, fascinatingly, they were looking at it and they were interrupting the interview because they said, I only have 5 minutes, so I need to ask another question. So can I just stop you there and move
very
to the
gentle,
next? Very gentle. Yeah. So I see the contrast between how men and women were asking questions across the board for GameStop, Reddit. It was fascinating.
That's actually down to me. I know you disagree, but I think it's down to socialization and gender bias, right? So the way women have conversations is just different from the way men have conversations.
Yeah, but equally, yes, I would agree. And socialization does affect
people.
And I'm
sure, there are exceptions to the rule. So there are, of course, going to be some women who are extremely outspoken. But as a gauge,
I'm looking at one.
Yeah.
More power to you, because I think women should be more vocal. In my family, at least, my daughter is completely dominant, right? And I married a woman who's also another force of nature. Thankfully, she's still asleep right now. She's not listening.
No, but the point is, it's down to us being aware of these gender biases and also then encouraging women to speak up and also telling them there are no negative repercussions for having your own voice.
Absolutely.
So it's a both-way thing, right? Men have to kind of be aware of it and women have to be aware of it from the perspective that, hey, what I have to say is valid, is something, is a good point. Why should I hold back?
Yeah.
You know, for me then, the question I have is sometimes it's good to just shut up actually and not say anything, because a good quality of leadership is to stop and listen more clearly. So perhaps that's why there's then this advantage perhaps for women, I put this in inverted commas, that because they don't feel the need to talk so much, that then they are biased towards listening. Does that make them better leaders? Which is the question, right? Because is the result of all this, you know, men interrupting and all that, resulting women forcing to say, look, maybe my superpower is to listen better, to read the room better, and that translates to long-term benefits with respect to my career. That's a question mark.
Yeah, well, the risk is falling into a gender bias one way or another and overcompensating. Yes. But I think it's time for a new approach, especially in ossified Asian cultures like Japan and, dare I say, Malaysia, Singapore, right, Thailand, Indonesia.
Olympics recently.
Very much so. Very male-dominated, very one race-dominated, right? Very
and also
homogenous in that respect. But then you don't have that divergent point of view.
Not
which
only
is
that, not only just men, but older men. So yeah. Where are all the young people?
Exactly, right? Right. You look at the Malaysian political scene. Well, we can go on ad infinitum. I've got a twirling hand signal already.
By a young female.
Yes, exactly. So we must go. But if you want to tell us what you think, tell us on BFM Radio or WhatsApp 018-789-8899 at BFM Radio. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. That was Joss Stone with Fell in Love with a Boy. We've all been there, but in certain cases, not always.
Not everybody's successful.
Yes.
That was a sad note. Moving on.
The first shades of love when you're a teenager. Anyway, so this whole pandemic thing has upended the whole world, right? And one of the things that has emerged as a result is the creation of more C-level, C-suite roles. Chief Medical Officer, Chief,
Digital Officer.
Digital Officer.
Chief Diversity Officer.
Diversity.
Chief Revenue Officer. Chief Growth Officer. A lot of chiefs lah.
I noticed the note of disdain in your voice, Phil.
I do. I find too many of these C-suite positions just being filled up for the sake of filling up. It's just...
Because of the better, wage salary band, maybe? More,
perhaps, or just infatuation for job titles.
Yeah. It's a thing. It's a real thing in Malaysia. We love our titles. The honorifics, the CEOs, titles. Even in the household, you've got titles.
What? I thought it's like the she who must be obeyed.
Well, yeah, in my house. No, in my house, it's only one.
Isn't it she who must be obeyed?
SWMBO.
Yeah. So everyone, you know who the queen really is, right? Yeah. But I don't know. These titles sometimes, they're just, in a way, are they responding to a situation? Which is the trend at that current moment. Then after that, the title becomes redundant.
Yeah, so chief must reflect some size of responsibility. And this is where the challenge is. I think when you create all these new roles, actually you find that the level and divergence of responsibility between the different chiefs in the same organization is so wide. I get it sometimes if people have it from a symbolism standpoint. Like, I want a chief diversity officer to make a point that it's a very important agenda item. Yeah, so maybe that's perhaps why some people take that approach if an organization is very people-centric led. But I find most cases, especially in Malaysia, that people just want to create titles for the sake of creating titles, in my view.
Yeah, and it's all about the status. It's all about the symbols. And I think a lot of it is also based in cultural, in our culture, right?
Yeah.
We like to be led. We like to be told what to do. We don't like to think for ourselves. And in many cases in the household, especially in Asia, don't question your elders, don't question the boss. You know, when the politicians come to the kampong, they're like, you know, they're treated like gods, basically, right? They come in with the corteges and the bodyguards and the police escorts. And then these are the role models for the rural folk. There's something inherently wrong about that because it's the same thing in America. You know, the politicians, the Donald Trumps, the Republicans, right? There's still a whole cadre of Americans that are still besotted with Donald Trump.
Yeah, but whether we can move towards a flatter structure, because at the end of the day, and I'm bringing this back to the corporate scene, there has to be a boss, right? There has to be a clearly identified boss. Mm. But how many layers and what title do you give him? And in a way, because you want to please everybody in an organization, you start handing out these titles as a form of reward because maybe perhaps you can't do it on a monetary basis. So they do this sometimes as a carrot, right, to incentivize someone. That's what I've noticed. Does it really work? For some people, it does, you know, because that for them, that means a lot that they have this title when they give out their name card, you know, that they have some prestige to it. So I think for sometimes it does work if you need to incentivize people on a non-monetary basis. I'm not saying it's not something that companies should totally not do, but it has to be a balance and that title has to have some meaning. It's not something you just give for the sake of it.
I have to say, like, when I used to work as a consultant like 10, 15 years ago, I saw companies actually put campaigns about, oh, everyone should be a CEO because they really love to glorify those titles. Mm. And what I find interesting is maybe it is not about the size of the role, but it actually gets the organization to look up at that person and say, okay, this is someone I aspire to be. But it comes back to your point, Xiaoning, about how do we, more importantly, right, besides all this symbolism, how do we actually get things done? Yeah. How do we make sure accountability and decision-making is clear? And if you look in the US, they've progressed way ahead. And they've even things like what they call holacracy, where there's no titles, everything is flat, and it's a amoebic project management structure. So people take turns on a project basis just to lead decision-making.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There's also a strong school of thought in America that says there should not be a president anymore. The country should be run by an executive council, right? 5 to 10 people, and they should be changed very, very regularly, like every 2 or 3 years, right? You know, when we work at BFM, right, and we do a lot of housekeeping before interviews, and I typically, you know, you can even see them before they come in for live interviews, right? The typical spokesperson, if he's preceded by a battery of PR people, then he comes with a driver and a cortege, right? You know, you can kind of like read.
Some don't even carry their own notebooks.
Yes, right?
Yeah.
They have everything prepared for them. And that will typically follow a playbook. I'm not going to say what kind of playbook, right? And then you see sometimes the CEO will come by himself, right?
Yes.
Alone. No PR people, no assistants. He will come early, and that will follow a certain playbook as well. I'm not going to name any names, but there's a formula there.
A love for power.
Yeah.
It's really this thing, right? Love for power and authority.
If I told you the names of the people who came alone and the people who came with a team of people, you'd be quite surprised, actually.
Actually, sometimes I find for some of the companies that I used to visit in the old days, in my old job, the very successful companies, those who run a rare type ship, those who actually really have a clear vision, they are usually the simplest of the CEOs.
Yeah, yeah.
In terms of the message, their hierarchy, and even I think just like they're just one man shows. I mean, they have good teams, but they're very down to earth. They don't have any like real formalized structure. You know what I mean? And even their office, and I always think an office is an indicator.
Yes,
their office size is not insanely large, you know. It's like quite okay. It's, you can tell they're the CEO, but it's not like fantastically great because they're very focused on cost. They're very focused on running the company. I think those are sometimes the giveaways when I go and visit companies.
I want to just tell you a story that we talked about yesterday. And really, this guy, I can't mention his name. He's like one of my best bosses. I was a 20-year-old. He called me into his office. He was a CEO then for a very large business. I sat down, he said, "Would you like me to make you a cup of coffee?" And that really just blew me away, right? And this shows you that the title doesn't mean responsibility.
Yeah, many stories abound of confidence and leadership. 26 minutes past 6, we'll come back after this with Aerosmith, The Other Side, BFM 89.9. 6:39 in the morning, BFM radio. Lance Armstrong's ex-girlfriend telling all governments around the world a change would do you good.
Oh, yes, they did. I remember this.
I was thinking for a while, I was like, what in the world is this relevant?
Yes. This was pre him getting caught, right?
That's right. Just drugs. Anyway, cheating on his sport. Well, anyway, so the Australians, they love to, go the other side when the rest of the world is going. And more power to them because they have put in place a law which will make the social media platforms pay for the content they're nabbing off their platforms, right?
Uh-huh.
So Facebook, Google, all these guys would have been nabbing news sites and monetizing that journalism and not sharing it with the news outlets. And I think that's a good move, right? But the social media platforms are not having...
Yeah, they're retaliating.
They're retaliating. They're not having that.
Yeah, big fight.
Yeah, they blocked all of Australian news media content.
Yeah.
And it's a big ruckus happening now because there's a lot of vital information being flown through. Even Google is having a separate conversation. So we're going to have a more detailed discussion on that later, I think the 7:30 section, right?
Yeah, we are. We're going to have a little chat with Marcus Strom, who is the president of the Australian Journalist Union, MEAA Media. And I think this is a very interesting conversation because does Australia start a precedent for the rest of the world, right? But to be fair, it's only Facebook which is currently taking off the Australian media content off their website.
Yes.
Google has made deals
Although they did threaten before.
They did threaten. But so you've got one very large big tech taking one position and then another large big tech taking another position. And I think the rest of the world is definitely going to keep an eye on this. And also for traditional media companies, what does this mean? Is it actually good or bad for you?
Good lah. It's about time they bloody paid, right?
Well, I'm not so sure about that. So we'll be having that discussion later on at 7:30 a.m. But there's other news, and I think we turn our eyes to Hong Kong.
Yeah, still journalism. Jimmy Lai, who runs Apple Daily, one of the most influential platforms in Hong Kong. Well, he's also a very strident and I think anti-China activist. And I think eventually his comments caught up with him because now he's in the dock for all kinds of charges, some trumped up and some not trumped up.
Yeah, this is a very, if you know, take a big picture, it's not only Jimmy Lai, right? It's also Martin Lam that was also being remanded.
And he's the granddaddy of the democracy movement in Hong Kong, right? He's in his 80s.
His 80s.
Yeah.
And so this is so landmark because last year you had the young basically being reprimanded, right? And now you're seeing the old guards of Hong Kong's democracy now being pulled in, which really goes to show China is really taking an all approach in how to clamp this down. They're basically targeting the youth groups, which are more inclined to protest on the streets. And then you're also targeting the older group that's more inclined towards parliamentary proceedings and settings. So it's very interesting how coordinated China is in trying to clamp this down.
Well, obviously the one country, two systems thing is not really holding true at this moment, right? And what does this mean for the future of Hong Kong? I mean, we already have seen, I think, questions about its viability, you know, as the financial center of Asia. But I think as long as it has China's backing, it will be. Because China is going to be is the center of growth in Asia, right? Yeah. And there's no denying, even in terms of M&A, in terms of corporate deals, lots of money coming out of China, fund flows out of China too, listing of big Chinese companies. That's all going to benefit Hong Kong.
I think more importantly, countries like us who are very, very dependent on the largesse of China and the BRI, the Belt Road Initiative, right? Mm. Whether or not, you know, China applies its template of management, which applies to Hong Kong, obviously Tibet, to some extent Taiwan, whether or not it will apply that kind of management style to Southeast Asia, where it does have a very strong foothold. And to a large extent, we are dependent on their checkbook for economic futures, right? Will they apply that same style to us? And if they do, how will we behave? How do we react? Do we bite the hand that feeds us?
Yeah, fascinating, because this is what you call muscular diplomacy, essentially. You know, and I would say what we've seen so far in China is that they've been more tougher in the regions that they feel they want to exert their authority and control. Xinjiang, Taiwan, Hong Kong, all these were kind of places, even the South China Sea, per se, because they want to exert their authority.
Well, they would have in their mind, they would have a valid claim.
A valid claim. But I don't really see that so clear yet in ASEAN. So that's a big question mark.
Here more is checkbook diplomacy, yes, right?
Checkbook diplomacy.
So it's the soft power where I'll sign a check. We'll do this project together. And so we are partners. I think that's what they want to be seen as.
Mm. Yeah, so they're not a warring nation. I mean, history has shown us that they don't cause conflict for the sake of a land grab. They've got enough of it, right?
It's very different from the United States.
Very, very different, right? But what do they do? So for example, with the East Coast Railing, if they fund the whole project in, you know, down the line, right? If we don't pay up, what happens then? Mm. Do you know what I mean? I think that's the larger fear.
For me, the thing now is when I look at the Hong Kong numbers, just pulling it back a bit, what strikes me now is that, you know, China is doing this, right? And Hong Kong's prosperity is interlinked to that effort about being a hub. So you're seeing that in the capital markets with IPOs like going gangbusters there. Mm. But it's not translating on the economic side and even unemployment. So Hong Kong's unemployment numbers are so high. They're at 7% from the November to January period. And the GDP for last year fell 6%, 6.1%.
But if anything has taught us, COVID-19 creates what we call the K economy, right?
Yes.
So capital markets have done well globally around the world. Look at US. You know, it's amazing when you look at how well NASDAQ has done or the S&P 500 has done from the lows we saw in March. But yet unemployment in US is way above, 7-8%? And it's the case in Hong Kong too. So unfortunately, the man on the street or main Main Street doesn't actually benefit from this fund flow due to ultra low rates.
And you see the divergence happening.
Yes, and then the problem is, how do we manage this inequality? I think questions that a lot of lawmakers should consider very seriously.
Much debate we are having this morning, young Jedis, plural.
Wise you are, Chuan.
Wise you are, Miss Wong.
Older,
646.
Not wiser.
Older, not okay. So classic in gold. Okay, we'll come back after this with social media and local news headlines. Don't go away. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was the Paul McCartney penned track, Penny Lane, obviously about a street in Liverpool where he grew up. That was recorded in 1966.
Have you been to Liverpool?
I haven't actually. Have you?
No, I haven't lah. Must go lah after this pandemic.
I haven't even been to Manchester and I prefer... Oh yeah, by the way, my
I'm not visiting any cities in London or in UK according to football teams, which I think is the theme here, right?
My contribution to the news commentary that we're about to pursue is the fact that Manchester United beat Real Sociedad 4-0 in the first leg of the Europa League.
Okay. Here we go. Yeah.
Not that you all care lah.
Well, if there was any team I was going to visit, it would be Arsenal because it's in London. Yay!
Chelsea as well, Spurs.
Chelsea too.
Not the quality of the footballers or the game they play.
Whatever. Anyway, whatever. Clearly not a football fan.
So what have you got? Tell me.
I've got the star in front of me and it's, well, actually on page, where's the page? It's on page 4 and it's the DG of Education saying that the D-Date TV Kementerian Pendidikan Malaysia will improve as tighter quality control is carried out on the future content. And this is according to the Education Director General. So he says the Education Ministry needs to have stricter quality control of the videos. And I think this is on the the recent one that was launched and created a bit of backlash, right?
A bit. Well, you know, when you're in the basement, you can't go any lower. So the only way is up. Yeah.
Well, to me, the videos... Well, I don't know. I don't have an 8-year-old. I don't know what an 8-year-old needs. So there's two aspects to it. Well, one is the content. Does it meet the criteria that the 8-year-old needs? And two is the production of the videos, right? So I think there is definitely room for improvement. And this is something that MOE should really pay attention to because I think all the criticism to the teachers, to the lady who did the video is unwarranted.
I think the intentions are good, so perhaps delivery is just a bit...
Apparently she was a volunteer, la, but
exactly.
Still, but if you did it TV, you know, you have to set
somebody,
a bar.
Somebody should be... I mean, who's in charge of this? Where's the oversight at the end of the day?
I believe Adiba Noor has recommended or proposed a volunteer herself to actually give some of the lessons. Which would be fascinating. I would even join.
Yeah.
Well, later on, we might be able to ask the ex-education minister about this because he's coming online at 7:45 and that's with Dr. Mazli Malik. He might have some views on how best we can move forward, especially since I think COVID-19 is going to be with us, whether or not we like it.
Yeah, okay. What have you got, Phil?
Well, a small side article, which is not really news, but I think it's just referencing to what Health Minister Dato Sri Dr. Adam Baba said, that the J&J, Johnson & Johnson vaccine will be very attractive. This follows on Wednesday when Ministry of Science, Technology and Innovation Minister Khairi said that they were going to sign an agreement to basically procure these vaccines. I think this is really important news because the vaccine is very helpful on two fronts. One, it's a single dose vaccine. Mm. And secondly, it can be transported in normal room temperature from what I understand.
And
so that makes it really easy.
And something that maybe Khairi Jamaluddin himself will answer because he's also on BFM this morning at 4 p.m.
Wow, you are on the
dots are so good, la.
We're here to tell you that BFM has robust programming throughout the day on all the top on all the important topics.
Because self-praise is good praise.
Yes.
Anyway, so the Prime Minister has said that Malaysia's stance on cannabis remains the same and is still considered harmful to society, even though in certain countries around the world it's now legal.
And it's cannabis investing.
Yeah.
That apparently is the big trend in the United States now.
A friend of mine who flew into Vegas a couple of years ago, he said the whole airport and the hotel stank of the weed.
And apparently Oregon, the state of Oregon, is even thinking of legislating to even relax drug applications and use. But in Malaysia, it's still strictly prohibited and not allowed, right?
Yes, not allowed. Yes.
That's the wonderful thing about the law, right? It's malleable.
No, I don't think in this case, because
way back when in America, well, you know, drugs
were
illegal.
The law has to be changed and then it's okay. But it's not malleable. That's the difference, Chuang. But moving on to Singapore, Singapore has come up with a very interesting travel bubble concept called the Connect at Changi facility. And that's to allow business travelers to meet without quarantine. That was something I think proposed during the budget because they're trying to find new ways to open up, right? Even though the fact that national borders are still closed.
It's a smallish facility, about 200. And I saw the pictures. Interesting, nice. Like you're in a meeting room and then they have a perplex glass.
So you fly in and then you're only allowed to be in this center, right? And then after you fly out after your meeting. So you can have these face-to-face meetings, but you're not allowed to roam Singapore at all. Am I correct?
Yes, correct.
It's a bit like you go to jail, incarceration centers, then you see your preferred inmate on the other side of the glass, right?
I suppose it's not far off.
But in more plush settings, I suspect. But it is literally a bubble. This is a bubble.
How important must this meeting be for you to actually go through all this?
True. Right? And I'm thinking if you have to do the perplex glass, why just go and do Zoom instead?
Exactly. So I'm just curious what the take-up will be. But I mean, kudos to Singapore for trying. Just trying a little bit and seeing what works, right? What do you have, Chuang, in front of you?
Well, you know, it's a very, very dry news day. And you know it's a dry news day when you've got to go to page 12 of the Edge CEO Morning Brief to find anything newsworthy. And this is actually something for 9 o'clock, right? CGS-CIMB has nearly doubled its target price for Unisem to $10.50 on the whole tech rebound, the whole semiconductor shortage thing, right? Yeah, so... I'd be interested to see how Unisem responds at 9 o'clock.
Well, just on the back on yesterday, we had a tech talk, and really, you're right. Tech stocks in Malaysia, KL, have really gone gangbusters. They've got 115% up for a year.
1 year basis, and you can catch that call that was with the senior analyst at Hong Leong Investment Bank, Tan Jae Young. You can catch that on the BFM app or on Spotify.
Let me guess, robust programming.
24/7. Oh, definitely. 24/7, always here for you.
365, don't forget.
Well, I have to share some sad news where Malaysia actually recorded its highest number of daily COVID deaths with 25 fatalities reported yesterday.
Yeah, wow, okay. Unfortunately, I think, you know, our case numbers more than 200,000. 274,000. Yeah. Yesterday, we had 2,708. Although there's a little bit of good news because the recoveries are 235,000. But the point is, basically... we still got to keep those SOPs. And there has been some change in the SOPs, by the way. So now you can, more than two people can go in the car and more than two people can sit on the table depending on the size of the table.
Just in time for Losang.
Just in time for, Chap Gome.
The twirling finger has appeared. So I must end now. 6:57 in the morning. We'll come back after this with the news. And then after that, the more serious side of the morning run. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.